And hey, I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor, and thank you for being here. We started Eastlake Church to help people find and follow Jesus. So if today you're in the process of finding Jesus, welcome. If you're in the process of following Jesus, welcome. We hope it all helps, regardless of where you are. And we're starting this Christmas series, and today the topic is guilt. And Christmas time can be a huge season to bring on the guilt. It's like our kind of our whole life sort of shrinks down, and we remember everything. And but it also can be a great time to escape guilt. So if you're here online, thanks for watching, and grab your notes, and we'll talk about how to escape guilt. It's the big idea this weekend. You can write it in your notes, how to escape guilt. We're always hoping what we say on the weekends you can take into the week. And guilt is really a it's like a trap. There was these two kids, little kids, grade school age, that would go visit their grandparents out in this farm. And so they're out there, and the little boy, he gets a slingshot. So they're out on this farm, he's got this slingshot, and he's told, you know, don't shoot at any of the animals. And he's out there, and he sees his grandma's duck walking across, like, towards the pond. So he pulls his slingshot back, and he's just kind of looking at it, and he lets go, and the rock takes off and just, like, hits this duck right in the head and just kills it. He's like, you know, of course, like any little boy, he looks around like, oh, did anybody see it? And there's his sister on the back porch. She's seen the entire thing. And she runs into the house. He's like, oh, man, I'm so dead. She's going to tell grandma. But she doesn't. He's like, I don't. And then dinner that night, they're eating dinner. And at the end of it, all the different, you know, old-fashioned end of the dinner, the grandma and the little girl would clear off the table. She's the older one. So the grandma gives her the nod. And the little girl says, oh, no, grandma. Billy wants to, the little boy's name is Billy. Billy wants to do my job tonight. Don't you, Billy? And she leans over into his ear and she whispers, remember the duck. And he's like, oh, yeah, grandma. I want to help with the dishes tonight. I sure do. I'm going to help with the dishes. And I say, jumps up and he gets the dishes. And this goes on and on and on for days, the entire vacation. Like anytime she needs something, like he's her little slave. She's got him trapped, or really guilt has him trapped. Just remember the duck. Remember the duck. Remember the duck. And that, our memories at Christmas time. And the next thing you know, you sort of feel trapped, and you're kind of like a slave. And today we're going to take a look at a part of the Christmas story that's written by a man named Matthew that used to be trapped by guilt until he found Jesus. And he's going to write a story in the beginning of the Christmas story about Joseph and Mary at a time that they were struggling with guilt. So let's read the story right here. Here's Matthew writing, this is how the birth of Jesus Christ came about. The mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph. Before they came together, she was found to be with child through the Holy Spirit. Because Joseph, her husband, was a righteous man, he did not want to expose her to public disgrace. He had in mind to divorce her quietly. But after he considered this, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She'll give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. And all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will be with the child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. When Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him and took Mary home as his wife. But he had no union with her until she gave birth to a son, and he gave him the name Jesus. Now, here's Matthew. Matthew is a Jewish guy, lived way, way back in the day when Israel and all of the world, really, was ruled by Rome. And so Israel despises the Romans because they're big and mean and they oversee, like they control Israel. And Matthew is a Jewish guy. And here's the thing about Israel. Israel, there was one dominant church. All the Jewish people went to one church in Israel. So they all go to the Jewish church. And Matthew decides he's going to leave that church. So he leaves the church that everybody goes to, his grandpa and his aunt and uncles and friends and family, and everybody leaves that church, and he also puts God on hold. And here's what he does. This is like the unbelievable thing. You know, he takes a job in the Roman government, a high-paying job in the Roman government. And so, you know, he's dealing with some guilt now because he feels like I've betrayed my church, I've betrayed all of my family, and I'm really doing everything that everyone wishes I wouldn't have. So he's left the church, he's working for the Roman government, and he's got all this money, and here's the problem. Like, he's building a whole new life, and things are going really, really well. And I don't know if you ever tried, like you do something, and it causes you to feel guilty, and then you have a bunch of successes, and everything seems like it goes your way, and yet it doesn't make the guilt go away. Or there's the reverse of it. The reverse is when you decide to do something, and you know it's a mistake, and you go and do it anyways, and the guilt comes up, and then your life, like, totally sucks, and it goes downhill, and everything works against you, and you're thinking, why do I still feel guilty when my life is so bad? And here's why. It doesn't matter if you have a great life or a really sucky life. It won't do anything about guilt. And it really does seem like at some level that if we get what we deserve, it'll make the guilt go away. Almost like if we hate ourselves and if we deserve it, it'll make the guilt go away, and it never does. It just messes up your relationship with God, and it messes up your relationship with people, and it messes up your life. And so there's Matthew, and he's got all this guilt going on. It's not going away. And he meets Jesus, and when he sees Jesus, Jesus makes an invitation. He says, Matthew, do you want to come and follow me? Come follow me. And so he doesn't do a background check. Jesus doesn't interview him. He just says, come follow me. So today, if you're here and you've never met Jesus, and you're thinking, I wonder what all the steps will have to happen for me to be able to meet Jesus, the answer is there's no steps. Or there can be lots of steps. It's up to you. But Matthew sees Jesus for the very first time, and Jesus says, come follow me. And Matthew jumps at the chance because he recognizes, this is my opportunity. This is the day that I can start to escape my guilt. So off he goes. And years later, he writes the story that I just read. I mean, not only does he become a follower, he becomes one of the big 12 dudes, the big 12 disciples, and he's like there at the front row. He sees all the Jesus story. And so later in his life, he decides, you know, he says, this is how the birth came about, because there's questions and rumors, and there's all kinds of guessing going on. Like, how did the Jesus story get started? So he says, I'm going to write a story. I'll tell you about it. It's in the Bible. It's the book of Matthew. It's the Bible's version of the Christmas story. And he says, this is how the birth of Jesus came about. Now we're going to look at it in two different words today to kind of frame it so we can have application, because you want to be able to leave here today with something to go forward with in your life, application. So the first word is right in the word confession. So we're going to kind of frame the Christmas story. The first word is confession. My grandfather was a great high school athlete, a really good one, and he lettered. He got a varsity letter, and he was showing me the varsity letter one time. He was from the East Coast, Reading High School, so there's a big giant R, and he'd wear it on a jacket, and he was showing it to me one day and telling me how he got this letter in track and field. He was a, you know, awesome athlete guy, and he says, you know, there's a story behind this letter. It went missing for 50 years. And I go, how did that happen, Grandpa? He said, well, let me tell you the story. When I was a senior in high school, a bunch of us were over at this guy's house. A whole bunch of us were at this party. We're all hanging out. I didn't know him very well. I went to school with him. I kind of knew him. We're all having this big party, hanging out. And when I left, I forgot my letterman's jacket. So I go back and I go to the house and knock on the door. He comes, and I said, hey, I left my jacket over here. You know, could you get my jacket for me? And he says, oh, okay. And he'd gone for a long, long time. He says, then the kid comes back. He says, I can't find your jacket. You must not have left it here. And my grandpa said, even as a senior in high school, he's like, no way. I told that guy's stealing my jacket. But he couldn't prove it. So he loses his letterman's jacket, loses his letter, and life goes on. Goes into the war, out of the war, moves from the East Coast, marries my grandma, goes to the West Coast. Years go by, come out to the high school reunion, never goes, too much money. It is 50th high school reunion now. 50 years has gone by now. He decides, I'm going to go back and see everybody. I'm going to go to my 50-year high school reunion. So he goes. And he told me he walked into a large room and he saw all these people and he was kind of freaked out because he kind of didn't recognize, like, wow, a bunch of old people here. Of course, he was old too. And he's like, you know, I can't recognize them, you know. And then all of a sudden he looks across the room and he sees that guy and he recognizes that guy. And like he sees him, he looks at him, and the guy sees my grandpa, and they look at each other. He says the guy looked away really quick. He's like, oh. And my grandma's like, there's that guy who stole my jacket. 50 years later, that guy stole my jacket. And so the guy looked totally guilty. He looked away, and he said for 3 days, every time he'd go around, the guy, oh, how you doing, George? And he wouldn't talk to him. Finally, the reunion's over. My grandfather's all the way back on the West Coast, and a package arrives a week later. My grandpa opens up, and there's a manila envelope in it. There's no note, no nothing, and he empties it out on his desk, and out falls the letter. No note, no nothing. But on the package, the box, the guy had written his name in his address. Do you know that it doesn't matter how much time goes by? Time helps, but it doesn't heal. After 50 years, he still needed to make a confession. What do you need to talk to God about? You know, Mary, she's sort of got a problem here, because Mary, she's like 14, 15 years old now, and she's engaged to Joseph, and in that day, that meant they were legally married. So they're not married yet. They haven't had the wedding day, but they're legally married. And so she's legally married to Joseph, and it gets found out that she's pregnant, and the baby is not Joseph's. So I know that when you see little baby Jesus and the little lambs and everything and the star up in the sky and all the straw and everything, it's like, oh, cute little baby Jesus, cool story. But it didn't start out as a cool story. I mean, she's pregnant and it gets found out. So she never says anything to Joseph. All of a sudden, everybody starts realizing, hey, that girl's putting on some weight. And she's eating a lot of ice cream with pickles. You know, have you ever, maybe you're here right now, and there's something you need to confess to God or somebody, and you've been putting it off. You haven't said anything, putting it off. And you're sort of aware of this invisible clock that's kind of running in the background. You're like, oh man, I got to do it before somebody finds out. And that's Mary. And so before she ever says anything to Joseph about the story, about how any of this stuff happens, it says in the story, Matthew writes, and she was found to be with child. It got discovered. Somebody else had to say. Can you imagine Joseph when somebody comes up and says, hey, I got some bad news? This is a real story. It's kind of the story before the Christmas story. And I'm sure Mary felt very guilty that she didn't say something to Joseph beforehand. I remember, like, you know, like you have something to say and you have something to say. Maybe it happened to you. Has this ever happened? Where you know you need to say something, you got to say it and you got to confess it, but it's hard. You don't want to go through it, but you know you need to. And all of a sudden, somebody else blabs it before you get the chance. That's Mary. That's where she's at. And she probably felt super guilty. She probably felt guilty carrying it around, and then she felt probably really, really bad that she didn't say something before it came out, before she could say something. She's like probably very weighted down by it. I have this friend that's a really super good dad. He has two boys and a daughter, and he's a super good dad. And he noticed the middle son. He was noticing. It just seemed like first bad mood, and then not having a good day, and it just seemed like heavier and heavier, and almost like depressed. And he's talking to him, saying, "You know, is there something wrong? Is something going on? Something happened at school? No, everything. You know, is there anything you need to say to me? No, nothing like that." And finally, he comes with this idea. He goes to his son. He says, "Son, listen. I'm not accusing you of anything. But if there's anything that you've done, if there's anything that you need to say, I want to give you a free pass. You can come and you can confess it to me, and I promise there'll be no consequences." What if God were to say that to you? What if that actually was on the table? You could confess anything to God, and there'd be no consequences. He said, his son said, "No, I told you, I don't have anything to say." And then later that night, he came with tears in his eyes. And he said, "Dad, I stole your Porsche and took it out on a joyride when you were gone with Mom the other night to dinner." And my friend's telling me the story, like in his mind, he was like being challenged, like, "My Porsche." Because his family knew, he liked one of those redone Porsches, really cool Porsches. His family knew, "You don't even sit in my Porsche without my permission. This kid took it out for a couple hours around the neighborhood." I'm like, right on, you know. It's like, lock the key up, you idiot. I mean, what are you thinking? This guy, he's a teenager, no driver's license or anything. He's driving it all around, you know, Ferris Bueller style. And his dad said to him, here's what his dad said, and it was amazing. He said, "Son, I am so proud of you for confessing. And like I said, there'll be absolutely no consequence." And then he said it was like he watched the weight come off him. Now listen, that is what's on the table for you. Jesus took the consequence. You won't receive a consequence in your confession to God. That's what's on the table. You know, Joseph, he's kind of in a weird place because, you know, Joseph here, it says that he's a righteous man, so he has a reputation, so he's a righteous man, and he decides that he doesn't want to publicly disgrace Mary, so he's going to divorce her quietly. So he's kind of like a no-win situation here. I mean, think about Joseph. I mean, he finds out all this news, and then he says to himself, well, I'm not going to be with her. I mean, this is the worst. And by the way, women, if you want to rip a man's heart out of his chest, just do that to him. And so Joseph's like, you know, and so he can't be with her. He's like, he doesn't want to be with her anymore. But if he is with her, then everybody thinks he's the guilty guy that had sex with her before they got married, so he can't go there. But then if he says something, he's going to disgrace her, and he loves her. So Joseph's in a very tight spot here. I mean, any way he goes, he loses. He's like, either I get to like participate in adultery, somebody that committed adultery against me, or I have to publicly disgrace the woman that just yesterday I really loved and thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with. And that's where Joseph's at. And so here's what he decides. He's going to leave her quietly. Anybody ever left you quietly? They just try to sort of sneak away like they're not going. Here's what Joseph does. He thinks, well, maybe if I don't make a big deal out of it, nobody else will. I've tried to deal with guilt like that before. It's no big deal. Nobody's even noticing. I like when you pretend that something isn't a big deal, it won't help you escape guilt. And Joseph starts pretending, well, maybe nobody will notice. No, nobody will even see that I've done this. And of course, it doesn't work for him. I mean, you know, for him, it's not like they sinned or anything, but they're having a huge problem trying to make a confession with each other. And I've noticed when you really have sinned and done something, it's even more difficult to confess it. And when he decides, well, I can't be in adultery and I can't like look like I've done all this guilt thing, so I'll just make it look like it's no big deal, and that doesn't work. So I just want to say, is there anything in your life that you're trying to figure out? Well, gosh, it's really no big deal. And he's thinking about it. It says in the story, he's thinking about it, he's processing it. And God will give you an opportunity to process things. But I want to ask you this question. Is there anything in your life, and it seems like the more you think about it, the guiltier you feel? I've been in that trap before. I've done something wrong. I said, well, I just need to think about this and process it and work through it and process it and think about it. And the more I think about it, the more guilty I feel. And it's almost like God interrupts Joseph and says, Joe, you're overthinking it, man. You're not going to think your way out of this one. You're not going to process yourself. No, you're way overthinking this, Joseph. Because you can't think your way out of guilt. Let me tell you why. Thinking about something is very different than confessing it. And sometimes when I think, I sort of like get trapped. It's almost like I believe I've done something, but I haven't. It's like the conductor that's on the train, and this train crisscrosses the nation. He's the big conductor, and every time they roll into a town or a city, he's the one that yells out the name, you know. So they're rolling, he's always yelling out the name of the city, yelling out the name of the city, yelling out the city. And after doing this for quite a while, he gets tricked into thinking that he's actually experienced these cities, that he's been there, he's experienced them, and the dude never even got off the train. And that's what happens sometimes when you overthink it. Confession isn't about thinking. The angel of the Lord comes to Joseph and says, overthinking this, you better make a confession. So I did want to ask the question, is there anything in your life that you need to confess to God? Because that's what's on the table, without consequence with him. Look what it says in the Bible here. Someone's saying, finally, I confessed all of my sin to you and stopped trying to hide my guilt. I said to myself, I will confess my rebellion to the Lord. And you forgave me. All my guilt is gone. Now here's how you know if you need to make a confession. Do you have any guilt? Well, I don't need to confess anything. Well, then you have no guilt. But if you do, do you need to make a confession? See, it's not that Jesus doesn't want to forgive me. It's I'm unable to receive his forgiveness because I haven't confessed. He's ready to forgive. Now, the second thing you know, let's turn it over there and write the word calling. And, you know, in this idea of calling, you know, Joseph gets this visit from this angel. And, you know, for Joseph, this thing is over now. I mean, when he looks into his future, I mean, he's like, Mary and I are done. Let me give you the background. In that day, when a Jewish family, they would arrange the marriage. So they would like say to the little dude and the little girl, you're going to be married. Hi, introduce each other and poop, you're going to be married. And then after they decided that and they were legally married now, you would go to your own separate home. So the groom, the dude would go to his house, the bride woman would go to her house, and they would spend an entire year preparing for their future. They plan out the wedding and all the things they were going to do and the kids that are going to have, the house they're going to live in. I mean, for an entire year, before you ever even got to be together, sex, anything like that, before any of that occurred, you planned out your future for an entire year. So Joseph is home and he's planning everything out, the jobs and how he's going to do it, kind of husband. Mary's doing the exact same thing. It's in the middle of all this preparation that the bombshell lands on Joseph. Mary's pregnant. And Joseph's like, well, not with my baby. And by the way, if the virgin birth is sort of hard for you to get your head around, it's like, I don't know if I can believe that. Welcome to the club. I mean, you know, it's hard. Here's why it's so hard to believe in miracles, because we don't do miracles. We've never experienced a miracle. We don't know what it is to go zzzz, and it happens. We don't know what that feels like. And so it's hard. We see a miracle, and well, that doesn't make sense to me. Well, of course it doesn't. We're not miracle workers. But this is a historical, this story is historical. This actually happened. This is a man writing it down. And he's saying, deal with it. No sex, baby. Weird math. And so young Mary, you know, and right in the middle of all this thing. And can you imagine Joseph? I mean, how do you tell your parents? They've already picked out all the china and the place where you're going to have the reception and this whole big thing's going on. This is who I'm going to marry. And if I'm stepping a little bit into your life, because it's possible someone's here, you've been way down the road with somebody thinking you were going to get married, I'm going to get married, and you know what that feels like. Wait a second. Or you've been through a divorce and you thought, I'm going to be with them all of my life, and now it's not going to be. Christmas can be the time that all that comes back. And I'm hoping today will bring healing, not hurt. Because it all comes back, and you're like, wait a second, I thought I was going to have a whole completely different life. Well, this isn't the life I'm supposed to have. That's what Joseph's thinking. Not a whole different picture. And I'm sure he was like, gosh, man, why'd Mary have to do that? Anybody in your life, and you think about him, and you go, God, they ruined it for us. He's probably thinking, what? Again, you know, you think about the Jesus story and the little manger with the straw and all the little animals and the star and the sweet baby Jesus, and you never think about, this thing's a mess. They're talking about divorce. It almost never even happens. How about Joseph down at the pub with his buddies? Hey, man, it's almost your wedding day. I'm like, whoa, okay, I can't wait till the wedding night. And he's like, there's not going to be a wedding. What are you talking about, man? Your parents have been planning this like forever. I mean, you're crazy. I'm in your wedding. I mean, you guys are going to have this great future. You're going to be awesome. He's like, there's not going to be a future. Mary and I aren't going to be together. That's the story. That's the Christmas story. That's the story before the story. I mean, when the angel shows up to Matthew, like he comes and here comes the angel, and he shows up. Joseph was not in a real good place. When the angel says, Joseph, take Mary home to be your wife. I'm sure Joseph's like, say what? Are you not tracking, Mr. Angel? There's another man's baby inside there. Joseph, take Mary home to be your wife. Don't be afraid. This is all part of God's plan. In fact, there's going to be a boy that's come along. He's going to rescue everybody from their sins. And by the way, that's what Jesus does. He saves us from our sins, not from the diet that we can't keep or the grade that we can't get in school or the test that we can't pass or people that are BYU fans that really need to be saved or whatever. I mean, he doesn't save us from bad sins like that. It's plain, but it's sins that he saves us from, because, hey, that's what screws our lives up. Is the sins that happen and the things that we do and things that get done to us. And he comes to Joseph and he says, Joseph, I'm going to tell you something you'll be able to relate to. You're going to be the parent of the one that saves everybody from their sins. And I guess it caught Joseph's ear, because he's like, that's what my life feels like right now. Those times you just feel like this is so jacked up. And somehow Joseph catches it. See, at that point in Joseph's life, he could only see his future from the perspective of his past. And I relate to that. You know, when I first started to follow Jesus, I always sort of felt like I came in through the back door of the church. I mean, I didn't know any Christians when I grew up. I kind of felt like I came in the back door. And I was in a church, like the kind of church that we are, where everybody was very accepting. They weren't judgmental. But I was always sort of like this, like, yeah, right, after a while, you guys are just faking it. And I just kept waiting for them to treat me like I treated other people and like I've been treated before. And I'd ask them, I'd say, why do you guys even accept me and love me? And same answer every time, well, because Jesus accepts us and loves us. I'm like, oh, yeah, right. You know, kept waiting, just thinking. And after a while, I started to get this sense that God had a plan for my life, that I had a calling, that my life was going to go somewhere in the future. But I could only see my future in the perspective of my past, just like Joseph. Like, how's this ever going to work? And the angel shows up and says, this is an old story. God has a huge plan. He still believes in the relationship. He still believes in the calling. Joseph, you're called to be the parent of the Messiah, the Christ. And by the way, when I became a Christian, I thought like that was his whole name, Jesus Christ, like his last name. I didn't realize it was a title, you know. And so, you know, Christ means chosen one. And Joseph, you're the chosen one that's going to take care of the chosen one. Joseph, God still has a future for you. Some of you need to hear today, you have a calling. And it's not anchored by your past. But it's hard. Because sometimes I can only see my future from the perspective of my past until I met Jim Meisner. He was in that church too. It was mostly young people like us here, but Jim had white cotton hair, and he was an older dude, and he sort of took a friendship to me, and he was my friend, and sort of kind of took me under my wing, kind of showed me like how it was all about being in church and stuff. And one day Jim says to me, right out of the blue, he says, Robin, you're going to be a pastor someday. I'm like, you're smoking crack today. I mean, you're just, what are you thinking? I'm not going to be a pastor someday. I'm like, I can't even, honestly, in my heart, this is what I said in my heart. Jim, I'm just hanging on. I am just hanging on, man. I feel like every week, just like 2 days before Sunday, I'm not even sure if I can make it to the next church service. Jim says, you're going to be a pastor someday. You're a cocaine dealer, because I ain't ever going to be. And then he said this, and it cut through all of my past. He said, Robin, I just can't see you being anything else. He spoke into my future, completely oblivious to my past. And, you know, I sent him a Facebook this week. I just typed him out a quick Facebook. I said, I guess you're not a crack dealer. Ended up a pastor. And God has a future and a calling for you. And some of you are still anchored into your past. You can only see the future from the perspective of your past. And there's lots of shame there, and there's lots of guilt. And it has you trapped. And just like Joseph, you're going to need some help. You're going to need Jesus to speak into your life and say, oh no, God still has a plan and still has a huge future for you. There's an old movie called Ben-Hur. It's way, way old. Charlton Heston is the star of it. He's more famous now for National Rifle Association. But in his day, he was like the big dude of his day, you know, the big Hollywood dude. And he played in this movie, Ben-Hur. So way back, you know, kind of weird now. But in this movie, they had this chariot race. It was like the big special effects of the day. And Charlton Heston is in a chariot, and he's like racing all these other chariots. And there was this director, Cecil B. DeMille. He was like the director of the day, big guy. And this chariot race, and Charlton Heston kept falling out of the chariot in real life. And he just like, the horses are getting knocked around. He can't stay in the chariot. And finally he comes to the director and he says, listen, he goes, I don't think I'm going to be able to win this race. And Cecil B. DeMille said, oh, you got the wrong perspective. He said, you just need to stay in the race. I'm the director. It's my job to make sure you win it. And you know, I mean, Joseph is here and God's like saying, hey, I'm still making the movie. And he is in your life too. And it might take a miracle. That's the bottom line today. The Lord turns mistakes into miracles. So I want you to hear something today, because in this story, Joseph and Mary, they need a miracle. Because they're struggling in guilt. And at Christmas time, you know, our life sort of comes up before us, and we see all the things that we thought we'd have, and we look into the future, and we don't see the future we thought we were going to get to have because of something we've done, and we just feel guilty. And it'll take a miracle with Jesus, with the guilt. And look here, right where it says, the bottom line, the Lord turns mistakes into miracles. I'm going to read you something in your notes. It won't come up on the screen, but just above that it says right here, I focus on one thing, forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead. I press on to the goal to win the prize for which God has called me. You have a calling and God has a plan. And then here's how it turns out for Joseph. When Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him, and he took Mary home as his wife. But he had no union with her until she gave birth to a son, and he gave him the name Jesus. God gave the honor to Joseph to name the Christ, the Messiah. And do you know, on that day, you weren't supposed to take your wife home even for an entire year, even if everybody was perfect, that you weren't supposed to. And here's what the miracle meant to Joseph. It causes him to go way back. He says this. He says, you know what? My future looks so good now. I want it right now. So he doesn't even wait the entire year. He takes Mary home right then. The wedding happens right then. He's like saying, I don't want her walking around looking pregnant and people talking behind her back. If she's walking around, she's going to have a hold of my hand. We're going to be together because we have a calling and we're working out a miracle. What do you need to confess to God so you can get your miracle? So the shame can just go away.